Welcome to episode 4 of Up to Speed. I'm your host, DJ Mechanic, and you're all listening to 102.3 Penguin Radio, or you're tuned into the website on the podcast section. And for whatever reason, if you just stumbled upon this podcast and you've clicked on to, you know, maybe you were just scrolling around, just looking at what was there, and you're like, hey, you know, I'm going to check out Up to Speed. I'm just going to skip into one of the episodes and see what it's about. This is a good episode to skip into because I'll just give a little summary of what we do here. It's just me, DJ Mechanic. I have been a car person my entire life. I've watched plenty of cars, car shows growing up, going to car shows and all kinds of different things. I've always been around cars essentially my entire life. And I thought it'd be a great idea to come on here and do a podcast about my knowledge of cars and how the car world's been changing over the recent years and give my own thoughts and opinions on these vehicles and, you know, hopefully lead you or your friends or whoever you know that may be looking for a car into a better decision on what you are going to be purchasing. So with that summed up, we've over the last few episodes been covering, you know, electric cars and performance cars, and those have been the really big two things that I've bounced back and forth between. But for this episode, I thought that we'd switch it up and get a little bit more eloquent and start looking at some luxury sedans for you businessmen who may be commuting to work in your high-end cubicle or Wall Street or wherever you may be. And I thought the perfect place to look would be at a company that's really come up very, very recently in this luxury world. The Genesis brand. Technically not Genesis, Hyundai. Genesis is basically the luxury version of Hyundai. It's kind of the same thing that Mercedes does with Maybach or Maybach, sorry. I cannot pronounce German words clearly. But yeah, that's what Mercedes does with Maybach. I know a few other companies do the same thing. It's how Chrysler, Dodge, and Ram, they're all the same company, but they have different names because they're different styles of vehicle. It's what Hyundai does with Genesis. Genesis is basically their $100,000 or $50,000 to $100,000 range for luxury cars, which is where most Mercedes and BMWs sit. Over the past few years, Genesis really hasn't done anything really impressive. Or, I mean, not in the last, I'd say 2017 and prior to 2017, Genesis wasn't really even on the map for anything other than the Genesis Coupe, which wasn't even a luxury car. It was a two-door sports coupe that people used to tune like crazy and still do to this day. And that's a very great car. It's a really good car, but that's not what Genesis was made to be known as, or it's not what Hyundai wants Genesis to be known as now. Recently, or over the past few years, Genesis has started creating some very, very interesting luxury cars. Things that have, you know, the features of Mercedes E-classes or even some S-classes for maybe even half the price. And the styling was what was initially the problem on these cars is now, to me, one of the biggest standouts. I think the styling of the new Genesis look amazing with their big, almost Cadillac symbol style grill. It's the shape of a Cadillac logo, a little bit more stretched out, but it doesn't resemble anything Cadillac whatsoever. I think it looks fantastic. Some people will have controversy on it. I don't. A lot of people call it polarizing. I think it looks great, although it does lack brand recognition, but they do make up for it a little bit by keeping the Genesis logo right above the grill. The double lights with the two long strip of daytime runners look fantastic. The inside is extremely luxurious. It's got all the same things that you'd expect, you know, BMW 5 Series or E-Class Mercedes to have in most of their vehicles. Especially right now, the one that I'm referring to is the Genesis G80, which is their kind of, you know, it's the one that they sell the most of. It's their flagship, I guess. Not their most expensive, not their cheapest, but definitely the one that they're going to push the most in marketing. I think it's a great step, especially with the GV80 SUV also coming into the lineup with Genesis. So now that there is going to be an SUV Genesis, which they've been lacking for the past few years. And I think the one thing that Genesis has over all these other companies is their features are just better. The entry-level G80 comes with a 2.5-liter inline-4 that has 300 horsepower, or you can opt for a 3.5 V6 with 375, which is fantastic. You get 19-inch wheels, a panoramic sunroof, ventilated front seats. You get power trunk lid, 21-speaker Lexicon stereo system, and it comes in rear-wheel drive, but you can also get all-wheel drive. The features of this car are just... I mean, they just keep going. They just continue to stack on and on and on. And for the price, the starting base price of $48,000, $60,000 if you want that 3.5 trim, I think it's way better than what you could get with a BMW 840i or something similar, or a Mercedes E-Class. I mean, you get, what, like a 14.5-inch infotainment as well? It's just so much higher and so much more classy than the 840. But the one thing you are going to have to compromise in is, of course, the name. You are buying a $50,000 Hyundai. But I think that that's not a bad thing. I don't think it's a bad thing at all. Because think about it. We've seen things like this in the past. Lexus used to make incredibly slow, boring. They just won all the lame awards and just things you don't care about. There used to be a Volvo-type company. And then the LFA came out. And all of a sudden, people were like, oh, but it's still a Lexus. I'm not going to buy it. We don't really... We've never seen a Lexus supercar. It's going to be terrible. We're not gonna look into it or anything like that. And now the Lexus LFA is one of the most revered and respected supercars in the modern era. Even to this day, people still would love to get their hands on an LFA. An old one, too. I mean, a 2008 model. They haven't even made one since 2011, I don't think, was their last model year. 2012. They haven't made one since then, and they're still worth $500,000-$600,000. And even finding one on sale is near impossible just because people want to keep it as a collector's item. It's an incredible vehicle. But everyone passed up on it simply because, oh, it was a Lexus. We've never seen a Lexus supercar. They've only made boring cars. I think that Genesis is going in that same direction. I think that Genesis really, I think that they're going to make a name for themselves very, very fast. And they already, I mean, essentially they already have, but they're pushing to be one of those top of the top. When you think of luxury, they're trying to make it so you think of Mercedes, BMW, and Genesis. Right now, I think they're still lacking in that, but that's just because they haven't been around for that long. And they're lacking that one little snap of that one little car that, you know, a celebrity that starts driving it, and then all of a sudden, oh, everyone sees a Genesis now, or something like that. It really takes something simple. Something like a little culture change or a little bit of a trend around or Genesis, and all of a sudden they're going to be in the conversation, I mean, forever. That's what happened with Dodge. People started taking the Hellcat as a symbol of power or like as a rap thing almost. Every other bar in rap for a while was about a Hellcat, and now all of a sudden everybody wants a Hellcat, and now Dodge is basically saved from being out of business because everybody loved the name Hellcat. That's kind of what Genesis needs right now, is that little spark to get them over the edge. But right now, I mean, if you don't care about clout, go buy a Genesis. Do not spend all your money on a BMW 840i. Yes, it may be a little bit better, but it's so much more expensive. Same thing with Mercedes E-Classes. You're going to get a better built, better featured, maybe a little bit weaker interior, but barely, for, I mean, thousands and thousands less than you would be paying for just a name, is essentially my point here. You're listening to 102.3 Penguin Radio. This is Up to Speed. I'm your host, DJ Mechanic, and we'll be back. Welcome back to Up to Speed, only on 102.3 Penguin Radio. I'm your host, DJ Mechanic, and I know, I said that the only two things we cover on here are things that are very fast and things that happen to be coming electric, and I know it's a trend that keeps coming back and back and back, and I know we were going to switch to luxury today, but before we go back to luxury, there's one car that I want to throw in between, just because I feel the need that I have to talk about this, because we've mentioned it in past episodes, but I haven't really given it a full coverage yet, and I feel like it's something that I need to do, because you'll know why. In 1907, John Willie took over a financially troubled Overland car company and established Willie's Overland in Toledo. Willie began manufacturing trucks for the U.S. Army. We now know these as Willis Jeeps in 1941. Very famous car. You may be wondering why I'm talking about these past history events. Just see where it goes. You'll understand in a second. In 1970, American Motors purchased Kaiser Jeep and is now producing Jeeps, pickups and wagons, and military trucks. They're producing Jeeps that are civilian models, and also making Jeeps and things for the Army. But around 1970, 71, we're in Vietnam, we start needing bigger vehicles for the military. We start needing things that are better and faster than a Willis Jeep. So what do we do? The new subsidiary called AM General was formed to manufacture commercial vehicles for American Motors, while development on a high mobility multi-purpose wheeled vehicle, HMMWV, was set to replace the Jeep and three other military vehicles. This is what we know as the Hummer H1, or what the military calls it in the Gulf War as the M998 HMMWV, nicknamed the Humvee. Later on, Arnold Schwarzenegger spots a convoy of them, says, "Hey, if these were ever made for the streets, I would absolutely buy one." This sparked, you know, a lot of people to be like, "Whoa, I would totally buy these as well," because obviously who wouldn't? AM General listens, they start making civilian models. The first model goes under the name Hummer. We get the Hummer H1. It has a modified Chevy Tahoe 6-liter V8 in it. And then we get the Hummer H2, which becomes a much, much more road-focused, road-legal version of the car. This is the Hummer that we know and love. This is the Hummer that everyone you see on the road is either an H1, either an H2, sorry, or an H3. But after 2000s, early 2010 maybe, they stopped making Hummers. They were too bad on gas. They were just unreliable. They've got a bad reputation over time, and people just kind of stopped worrying about Hummers, and that was that. It was just kind of a early 2000s, 90s phase. Until now. Recently, or not super recently, but about a few months back, we got a very interesting announcement that weeks came out of nowhere. GMC was going to bring the Hummer back, which we thought would have been a really terrible move if it wasn't for the EV tag at the end of the Hummer. That is correct. They are going to be making an electric Hummer. We've talked about it a little bit on the show. But I wanted to cover some of the details of it because if all of them are true, this is going to be one of the most ridiculous off-road vehicles ever made. And that's a really strong statement to make for an electric off-road car, especially a Hummer. People were outraged when they first heard that it was going to be an electric Hummer, because it's not what the Hummer stood for to a lot of people. The Hummer to a lot of people stood for, you know, an American muscle, full diesel engine vehicle. That's what people like to associate with, trucks and muscle cars, but that's not what the Hummer ever was. The Hummer was something that was made to get over land by any circumstance, with any trial in front of it, and withstand it well. And so GMC has taken that and they've made the electric version of the Hummer. And some of these statistics for it are ridiculous. 1,000 stock horsepower from its top powertrain. 1,000 stock. That is, there's not even words for that. You know how insane that is. Even if you're not a car person, you hear 1,000 horsepower on an electric GMC car that's coming out of the factory. I mean, your Honda Civics are getting 10, or not 10 horsepower, but I mean, compared to that, it feels like 10, maybe 200 something horsepower. And it feels quick. Your Honda feels quick. It feels fast, but a 1,000 horsepower is going to be a lot more. Yeah. And yes, it is heavy, but with that much power, it doesn't really matter how heavy you are unless you're weighing the same as most semi-trucks, and of course this doesn't. 0 to 60 is claimed to be around 3 seconds for a Hummer. That is unbelievably fast, almost unnecessarily fast for this vehicle. And some of these statistics seem like, oh, well, they're just going to throw these stats in to get people hyped, and then in a few years they're going to come out with the actual version of the car. That's what always happens with these concept cars. I would have thought the exact same thing until the Super Bowl came around and we got a commercial with the car in it. The official car there, launching 2022 with a starting price of $80,000. When they come out with a price and a model number and specs and the official look of the car, there's not much room to settle with messing with some of these numbers. So the numbers that they're claiming are what this Hummer is going to get, which is absurd. I mean, unbelievable. It's just, I can't wait to see what this thing is going to be able to do on the road whenever it comes out. Because for that price, you know, I mean, if you're going to get the 1,000 horsepower one, you're going to be paying maybe a little bit over $100,000, which isn't that much for an 1,000 horsepower off-road electric monster with a 13.4-inch infotainment and comfy seats. And I have a loss for words for this thing. It's really that insane to me. 11,500 pound-feet of torque. There is nothing you're not going to be able to tow with this thing. And it's claiming around, I believe, 350 miles per charge on this battery. Obviously, it's going to be fat less if you're off-roading or pushing this thing to the limit. But to make it that practical as well, there's really not a loss here. GM's done everything here right. And yeah, people are going to be upset because I've gone over the past of the Hummer. The Hummer is not an electric. It's not a road vehicle that's supposed to be all fast and quick, and it's supposed to be made to get dirty and do military work and be for these big, you know, angry guys and things like that. But forget the tag. Same thing with the Mustang Mach-E. You just need to get rid of the tag at the end of the name, and if you can forget about that, then you can really start to enjoy an incredible car. And I can't wait to see this thing come onto the road in 2022 because it is going to stir up a lot of good competition. The next thing I would be expecting is an electric pickup truck with these kind of statistics, maybe a Ram. We've already seen the T-Rex, which is obviously not electric by any stretch of the means. But now that SRT is leaving Dodge, I wouldn't be surprised if we started seeing electric pickup trucks that had this kind of power. So if that's what you were looking for, I would wait. But if you happen to be a fan of the Hummer, yes, it's not going to be the same Hummer that you saw in the early 2000s. It's not going to be the same Hummer that's running around in the dunes with people with guns running around in them and all kinds of these stupid bulletproof features and things like that. But it is going to be an incredible vehicle to drive. And that is the point that needs to not get overlooked when this thing comes out. You're listening to Up to Speed on 102.3 Penguin Radio. When we get back, we're going to be talking about back into the luxury field with the Mercedes Maybach and its new price changes and new features with the new model. I'm your host, DJ Mechanic, and again, we will be back. Welcome back to Up to Speed on 102.3 Penguin Radio. I'm your host, DJ Mechanic, and we are going to jump right back into the luxury. I promised we would. We're going to go straight back into it. We are going to be talking about some of the best that you can get. Obviously not the peak, not like the $3, $4 million one-offs. We're going to be talking about the reasonable top of the top for an everyday businessman looking to reach the peak of his career or her career, looking to get something very nice to cruise around in or have someone drive them around in. That's the way most of these cars are enjoyed. And when you think of that, a lot of people think of the Bentleys, the Rolls Royces, the British luxury cars, because they've dominated it for a very long time, and it's been their focus of their entire company. But one company in particular, one German company, has said, you know what, we're going to jump in on this luxury car thing. And of course, that's Mercedes. Mercedes has always been a luxury brand, but they've jumped on the very, very high-end cars. It's not something that BMW or Volkswagen or any other companies are going to be doing other than Mercedes. Mercedes is the main company that does the top-of-the-top luxury brands and tries to compete with the Bentley Flying Spurs and the Ghosts. But that's just because they can, and they don't do it with their S-Class, they do it with their Maybach S-Classes. Again, like we were talking about with Genesis earlier, I'm going to relate it back to here. Mercedes is Mercedes, but they use Maybach as their very, very top-of-the-top lineup. They use Maybach badges instead of Mercedes badges. It's technically the same company, but it's going to have different badges. It's going to share similarities with Mercedes, but things that some Mercedes wouldn't have. It's kind of what they've always done. And they've done it again here for the 2021 model, the 2021 Mercedes Maybach S-Class. Again, you're going to have that two-tone. The exterior is never really the focus with this car. It looks just as good as it always has with their very nice chrome grills. But this time they are running with a Mercedes badge on the front and then Maybach written on the very top of the grill. Usually they have a little almost triangle type shape with three M's in it. That's the Maybach logo if you've ever seen it. This time they're not going to be going around with that. That is still on the very back of the A-pillar though, however. So what's new with this new Maybach? Really not too much. It's a luxury car. It's going to have unbelievable features. Things that I can't show you here on radio, but I can talk about. Massive touch screens, heated and cooled seats, massaging seats in the front and back, a cooler or a slash refrigerator for champagne flutes, any of the infotainment that you'd ever need, drive assist, some of the best suspension you'll probably ever ride in. All things that the Maybachs have had in the past. And again, something that I've also had that I really like is a twin turbo V8 powertrain. These things have always had an aggressive amount of power for how luxurious they are, and yet they still ride very smooth even with this aggressive engine. It's probably because of those two twin turbos giving it a little bit of lag and giving it a bit of a smoother and less giddy V8 experience. And the starting price is not going to be something that most people are going to like, $185,000. But again, if you're in a Maybach, you don't care about the price. You're in a Maybach and you can afford a Maybach, and everybody can look at you because you own a Maybach. The two-tone Mercedes that drives around the streets and just puts this presence on everybody else that you are superior because you drive a Maybach or are driven around in a Maybach by your chauffeur as you sip on your cooled champagne in the back and your massaged heated seats. That is the experience that the Maybach will give you. Along the one thing that the Maybach does luxury different than the Rolls-Royces and the Bentleys is the Bentleys always put more of a focus on old school. Rolls-Royces and Bentleys are meant to be art pieces almost, and they share all kinds of similarities to their previous models, nods backs. They share a lot of wood and less technology and things to keep the car timeless. And that's great. If you are only going to be buying one luxury car for your entire life, spend all your life savings on one of these cars, don't buy a Maybach. Buy a Rolls-Royce, buy a Bentley. They're timeless. They're going to be much more well kept and much easier to keep timeless for a very long time. Maybachs will go out of date, would I say. Infotainment systems are going to start looking old after a few years. Some of the features on the inside are just going to start to look out of date because Maybachs are meant to be the peak of modern luxury. You're supposed to buy a Maybach or lease a Maybach and then give it back and then get a new one and then a new one and then a new one. It's for the people who can afford to keep buying these luxury cars. That's the difference between a Rolls-Royce and a Bentley and a Maybach. A Maybach is a symbol of ridiculous in-the-now wealth. And that's, if you're looking for something that's going to be modern and have the features of this year and the 2021 model, yes, go buy a Maybach. They're going to be great for you. But as much as I've talked this car up, if you're going to only buy one of these cars, get a Ghost or a Flying Spur, honestly. I think they look better. They give much more of a sign of luxury. And yes, the Rolls is going to be so much more expensive than the Maybach. Maybe, we're talking maybe $100,000 more. And yes, if you can't do that, then sure, just get a Maybach or something of the sorts. But if you can get that Rolls-Royce, just get it. It's going to last you so, so much longer than the Maybach. It's crazy how much better it's going to be for you in the long run because of how timeless they are and how much depreciation you are not going to have because it doesn't have old infotainment systems and old technology. It has the same standard tech that they've always had. They don't depreciate like nearly at all. And yeah, Rolls is just a better name. If you say you drive a Rolls-Royce, people are going to look at you with a much higher regard than if you say you drive a Maybach, because most people don't really know what a Maybach even is. They're just going to end up saying, I drive a Mercedes, and they're going to be like, oh, he drives a C-Class, like, that's nice. And they're not going to know you drive a $200,000 Mercedes or get driven around in a $200,000 Mercedes. That is the big difference between these two cars, and even the Bentley as well. I think the Bentley is also a fantastic option. Maybe a little bit more expensive, but not nearly as expensive as the Rolls. And the Bentley is going to also be much more of a symbol, last much longer, and really, I don't know, I think the Bentley drives better as well. I think it has better features, and I think it has better suspension. The Rolls obviously having the peak of suspension, but the Bentley right below it, and the Maybach finishing third. So yes, the Maybach is the peak of luxury. Kinda. It fades off a little bit, but it's still a fantastic car. And if a Maybach's been something you've always wanted, the 2021 model is clearly not going to disappoint. It's going to be just as good, better than the last year's model. And they just continue to get better and better and better. So, final thoughts. If you can afford a Rolls, buy a Rolls. If you can afford a Bentley, buy a Bentley. If you can afford all three, buy a Maybach. And then sell it and then buy another one the next year. That's essentially the hierarchy of these top three luxury cars explained in financial simple terms. You're listening to Up to Speed on 102.3 Penguin Radio. I'm your host, DJ Mechanic, and we will be back. Welcome back to Up to Speed. I'm your host, DJ Mechanic. We are on 102.3 Penguin Radio, or the Penguin Radio website. You may have just clicked on to this podcast. And for this last final segment, I'm going back to something fast. I'm sorry. I talked about the luxury today. We got a few good luxury segments in. Might save a few for next episode. Who knows? But there is a car that has been stirring up a ton of controversy in the past almost full year now, or maybe half a year, I'd say, 6 months. The new BMW M3. We get a new BMW M3 every 6 to 7-ish years. The last model was a legendary one, with it being tuned so many tunes. So many people have just taken this car and ran with it for hundreds of thousands of dollars in upgrades and just ridiculous things. It has a cult following behind the car. It always has. Ever since the car came out in the 70s or 80s, the M3 has been the peak of BMW pretty much forever. It's not even their peak car, but everyone regards it as the best BMW you can buy as an M3, a four-door manual V8, V6 driven car with a rear-wheel drive that can do burnouts all over the place, drift every corner, and just be an ultimate driving machine. That's what BMWs are made for. The looks of the last one were great. Everyone loved it. There was no complaints. And it was just a fantastic car. And now here we are in 2021 with a brand new model of the M3. So what's new? The grill. The grill. I can't get to another feature of the car without talking about the grill. That is how controversial this grill has been. Me personally, I've enjoyed it. I don't hate it. I think it looks, I've seen it in person, and to be honest, in person, the car is a lot more skinny and narrow than people think. So the skinny, or the more narrow and tall grill, to me, doesn't look too bad on the car. I think it looks different, I think it looks new, and I think that more car companies need to start reaching out the way BMW has and start making their cars look different. Nothing looks like this BMW M3, and if you see it going down the road, you're going to know it's a brand new BMW M3. With some Mercedes, if I see a C-Class going down the road, I don't know if that's a this year's C-Class or a 10, 15 year ago C-Class. I don't know. They all look pretty much the same, and their styling really hasn't changed much at all. BMW's was the same for a very long time, since the E30s was with a more boxy look, and then moving on past then to become more and more rounded and narrowed out. And now we have this new 2021 M3, and people really hate this grill. They've just gone after the CEO for it. They've asked for recalls, changes, all kinds of things. BMW has stood strong and holding on to this style of grill. They've said, the CEO came out and said that, well, actually, 1 in 5 people are enjoying this grill. And while I don't think that's what a CEO should be shooting for, maybe 4 out of 5 or 5 out of 5 would be a much better number than 1 out of 5 people liking the looks of your car. And if that many people aren't really liking it, then yeah, maybe there should be something changed differently. However, I personally think it looks okay. And I think what they've done with the models and pricing of the vehicle is also great. They set it up very, very well. You can get the standard BMW M3. That version of the car comes with a manual transmission, a 2021 BMW with a manual 6-speed transmission, which is fantastic. Unbelievable. If the best thing BMW's done in a very long time is keep a manual in this M3. More companies need to start realizing what kind of cars they are making. Same thing with, like, say, we'll take a Mazda MX-5. I mean, Mazda Miata. That car has been a driver's car. It's a fun car. It's not very practical. It's not very fast. It's not going to be the best gas mileage car out there. It's just fun. It's just something for people who like driving to drive around. And if they took the manual, they take the manual out of that thing, you're taking away part of the fun aspect of the car. And then what is the point of the car? The point of the car is just to be fun. And if you're stripping away the manual, that's part of the fun of the car. BMW has noticed this. And with the M3, they know the M3 is a driver's car, so they're going to give the most raw driver experience and keep that manual. In fact, the only way to get a standard BMW M3 is to get it with a manual. If you want the manual out of it, you have to upgrade to a more powerful competition. And the only way to get the competition, which is made to be the fastest of the fastest, is to get an automatic. Which, people, yeah, they're probably going to be like, oh, why can't I get a manual with all this power and all this? If you're going to get the manual, just get the manual and build the car out yourself. That's the point of the fun. The whole point of the fun is to make it faster on your own. BMW is selling you the base model of the car with a manual so that you can do whatever you want with the car, which I think is fantastic. And if you want that competition, you want that, you don't care about the driver experience, you just want something as fast as it can possibly go, get the competition, because the automatic's going to be faster than the manual. The engine's already built out for you, it's going to be extremely fast, and it has an all-wheel drive option while you still can get it in rear wheel, which is always nice. But if you're going to get this, you might as well get it in all-wheel because you're stripping away the fun of the car in the first place by taking away the manual. So, this new M3, it's going to be, with its base engine making 473 horsepower in that manual version and 503 in the competition, a BMW M3 with 500 stock horsepower, that is going to be fun. Fun, fun. I have not gotten a chance to drive one of these, obviously, because they've just been released to journalists and they're barely just starting to roll out to people on the roads. I was lucky enough to see one, however, in person, and again, I thought they looked great. I thought the interior was fantastic, very BMW you would expect, but a few modern touches. The only thing I don't like is they did make it so that the shift lever doesn't light up anymore on the manual. One of BMW's flagship traits was that the M and all of the lights on the, or all the shift numbers on the gear shifter itself would light up, so at night you can still see your shift map. That is a feature that is gone. However, if you're going to tune this car, which it's a BMW wants you to tune this car, then you're going to probably put in a new shifter anyways and forget the map. You don't need it if you're driving this car for that long. I think that everything they have done, I can't praise this new BMW M3 enough. I think that besides the grill, take away the controversial part of the car, it is a stunning BMW to look at. Probably the best looking M3 from every other angle besides the front for most people. For me, even the front looks pretty good to me. I think it just looks like a fantastic car. The lines, the angles, the wide body. The only complaint that I have heard and noticed on the car is the rear wheel arch kind of rolls out, and then when it goes to the door, it cuts really fast because they didn't want to make new doors that had a little bit wider kind of narrow in for just the M3, which is understandable. And you're only going to notice it if you get pointed out, and I pointed it out for you, so now you're going to notice. So sorry about that. That's my fault. But other than that very small nitpicky thing, this BMW looks better than the last three or four generations. I'd say back to the E30 M3. It's the best since then. The stock rims look fantastic as well. And you're going to get everything that you would expect from an M3 with this M3. You're going to get the manual experience. You're going to get the driver BMW experience. In the past few years, I have heard that the BMW drive quality has kind of lowered, I guess, or become less, how do I word this? Less mechanical, less touchy-feely, less sensitive. But I'm hoping that they're, with this car, they're looking to go as like raw driver experience as possible. So as long as they can continue that feat and push back to their old ways of making a very raw driver experience with this M3, of course I haven't driven it, and I've only been able to see very limited reviews on this car and limited coverage of it, but if they can go back to the way that old BMWs drive, I think this has a very, very good chance of becoming an extremely popular and extremely legendary vehicle on the road. So if you're looking to buy a new M3 and you can get over the grill, oh, just buy this BMW. It's going to be fantastic. You're going to love it. And if you don't, then I don't know what to tell you. You just don't like fun, because this car is just simply built for fun and nothing else. This has been episode 4 of Up to Speed, only on 102.3 Penguin Radio or the Penguin Radio website. I'm your host, DJ Mechanic, and thank you so much for tuning in. We will see you next week.